You remember summer camp. Swimming in the lake, hiking in the woods, songs by the campfire. This hour, camp culture, camps that have struggled, and what makes a camp work. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. A lot of things have changed when it comes to how kids spend their summers, but some of the simple pleasures of summer camp remain the same.
Week one is so fun. Week one is so fun. It's so fun. It's so fun. We're not allowed to say the one because we'd always pause and see if we could be completely silent.
Today, I'll talk with the directors of two Iowa summer camps and a camp consultant who helps struggling camps around the country. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It used to be that a week or two at summer camp was a break from the summertime routine of playing outside, riding your bike, going to the library, going to the pool. But times have changed. More families need childcare during the summer, and summer programs and day camps have filled that gap. Attendance at a lot of traditional summer camps fell off. But sleepaway camp seems to be making a bit of a comeback. This hour, we'll talk about camp culture, why some camps have struggled and disappeared, what makes camps work in the 21st century. We also want to hear from you. Why was camp important to you when you were growing up? What has it meant to your kids? You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour is Alex Kretzinger. He is the summer camp program director at the Des Moines YMCA camp. Hello, Alex.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Michael Johnson is also here. He is the director for Camp Hanashaw in Boone and communications liaison and Iowa legislative representative for the American Camp Association Great Rivers region. Hello, Michael.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And Gary Forster is also on the line with us. He is a camp consultant. He spent 30 years as a camp director, and now he travels around the country working with camps. Hi, Gary. Well, I can't seem to hear Gary.
Hello,
Gary. Nice to hear from you. Let's talk a little bit about some of the ups and downs in camps around the nation over the last few years. And in Iowa, we've had some very significant losses just recently and really over the decades before that. Last summer, Camp Fire Camp Hitaga near Walker, Iowa, decided to close after 83 years. The Girl Scouts closed four Iowa camps after the summer of 2013. Gary, is this a pattern around the country?
Yeah, unfortunately it is, especially with organizations that have lots of other things on their plates, because camps are remote and seasonal most of the time. It's really easy not to give them their full attention. So when a lot of problems come up, often camps are one of the things that they can find more room.
So are we talking about outdated infrastructure, or what are some of the problems?
Some of that. Some of it is just a lack of attention to the details of what parents are looking for today and what kids are looking for in a camp.
So enrollment.
Yeah, it's surprising how little camping has changed in the over 100 years that it's been around. But when people take their eyes off the details, it's pretty easy to have your enrollment go down.
Alex, at the Des Moines Y Camp, have there been dips in enrollment in recent years?
That's an interesting question. We, in about 2000, 2001, we were at a pretty low point. And so we had a new director come in, and we changed a lot of the way that we thought about camp. For example, our perspective of how we relate with our parents, not only the kids, but how to make camp something that parents want to be involved in. And it's really brought an upswing to the point where now, from that point, we served about 630 kids came onto our site during the summer. And now we're about 5,075, I think, was the estimated number that came to camp last summer.
Wow.
For us. So a lot of that, though, is kind of changing your mentality and the perspective that you take on what summer camp really is.
All right. How about Camp Hanasha, Michael?
First of all, thank you for saying that correctly.
I went to Camp Hanasha.
that's incredible. Camp Hanasha is we're experiencing an increase in our enrollment. We hit a low in 2011, and we've been increasing since. So this past summer, in our resident camp programs, we had an increase of right around 18%. In our day camp programs, we had an 11% increase. So I will say as well, just for my role with ACA, here in Iowa and nationally, there have been camps closing, but the trend is actually the number of camps are up since the low in 2012, and the number of kids in those camps have also increased. So we're starting to see a little bit of a bounce back, but, you know, like you said, unfortunately, there have been some camps locally that have closed, and I'm sure we'll delve a little bit more into that.
What do you think the resurgence might be about?
Well, I don't know if it's so much more of a resurgence as it was. The recession hit hard. It hit private camps hard. It hit agency camps hard. And we're getting to the point now where there's starting to be a recovery. You know, camp is for some people, it's a big ticket item. It's something for some parents, it's very easy if you need to cut some things out of the budget. It's considered a luxury by some, and it's one thing that's very easy to cut. I think that the recession was something really big and hurting the camp numbers, but we've seen a steady increase since then.
Let's talk about camp today, because a lot of us went to camp. As I said, I went to Camp Hanasha when I was in second grade, and a lot of us spent a week or so at summer camps growing up. How is that different in the 21st century? Alex, you were a camper as a kid. How are things different now?
I think some of the things that have really changed is trying to improve the security and safety on camps. I know Michael is a member of ACA and myself also a member. ACA really works on educating camps to make sure that they know about some of the safety standards. So I think one of the big changes that has taken place is that we've started to make camp cater to both the parent and the kids, and to improve our relationship with parents, a lot of that through safety precautions. So how do you balance the fun of camp with the safety that parents want to see? And so that's one of the changes I think that we have seen. I think keeping the traditions alive, though, has kept summer camp in its essence a lot of the same, and we focus on the same things. But one of the big changes I know of is our increase in safety and attention to it.
All right. And what kinds of safety are you talking about?
Well, we have standards that require some equipment for horseback riding, for example. We require tapaderos on saddles to protect feet. We require, which used to not be a requirement, but is for ACA accreditation, to have a helmet and require long pants. They all seem small, but when you think about it, there are plenty of potential injuries, especially as anyone can know if they send their kids out, anybody can come back with a bump or a bruise. And so we want to kind of minimize the risk of those happening. And so some of those things at horses, for example, or our high ropes course or our swimming pool, all of those things, we want to minimize the chance of injuries.
Now, of course, anybody who spends any time with children today knows that electronic devices are a big part of modern life for kids. Any electronics allowed at camp, Alex?
We try to avoid it. We haven't allowed electronics with kids yet. We try to find ways to let parents contact their kids throughout the week without using a phone. So we have an email service that parents can send emails daily, and we print them off and get it to the kids. So it's kind of a faster than postal service mail. We also do our regular post office style of mailings, but we try to minimize the electronic exposure, so that way they get more chances to build those face-to-face relationships and build on the skills that kind of get put to the wayside when you can text and get on Facebook and communicate digitally.
Right. Michael, from your perspective, what's different about camp today?
Well, I can tell you the camps that are being successful, the thing that's different, you know, I've been working in this field for 15 years, and I'm not even going to tell you how long ago I was a camper, but we have to diversify what we offer as far as programming, and it's kind of a balance. So we still have the same old standards everyone else has, the stuff when you think about camp that comes to mind, you know, archery, trailblazing, things like that. However, we have to do things a little bit differently now. We incorporate STEM into our programming. I know that's something that's certainly not unique to us. That's an industry movement. So that's STEM, science, technology, mathematics, engineering, and literacy programming as well. Camps that are doing those things successfully are seeing success in their numbers simply because, you know, we're at a day and age now where, because of the needs of education, and parents kind of understand this, what we offer is different. When you send your kid away for the summer, you know, we want to provide programming in a way where a kid is still having fun, but we still want to get them some sort of educational value. And I think that's how camp has changed since I've been in the game anyway.
All right. So, and Gary, it's important to note that both Alex and Michael mentioned what kids are getting out of camp and marketing that to parents. I mean, parents are the real customers here, right? They're the ones who are opening their wallets.
Yeah, and that's the biggest mistake we find with camps that are hurting. When I visit camps during staff training time of year, I'll jump up on a table before I'm introduced and yell out to the counselors, "Who do we work for?" And they'll yell out, "We work for the kids." And they'll say, "And what's our goal?" And they'll yell out, "Fun." They're wrong on both counts. None of these kids paid their own way to camp. 95% of the kids' registrations for camps across the entire country are signed by one person, mom. And I got to tell you, as a guy, it's embarrassing that more men aren't involved in that decision. So that's the key issue there, is we have not typically marketed to moms. And he asked what the difference is in the kids. There's a little bit difference in kids. But the fact is, after about a day and a half at camp, the exact same things that worked years ago, worked for their grandparents, still work terrifically well today. The real difference is in moms and parents. We did a study back in 1984 to find out what parents were most looking for when they were deciding what camp. And they said, of all the 35 different criteria, they said safety was their number one concern. And 27% of moms actually chose that as their first choice. And in a weighted standard, it was number one. We redid the study in 2007, and 97% of moms said safety was their number one concern.
Wow. And I'm sure if you surveyed kids, that wouldn't come up.
No, it certainly doesn't. Fortunately, kids don't watch a lot of Dateline NBC in 2020 in 60 Minutes.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about summer camp today. We're talking about camp culture, why some camps have struggled and had to close, what makes camps work in the 21st century. We also want to hear from you. What was important to you about going to sleepaway camp when you were a kid? Do you make sure that your kids go? Why is that important to you? Let us know. Tweet us at IPR Talks and email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Alex Kretzinger. He is the camp director for the Des Moines Y Camp, Michael Johnson of Camp Hanashaw, and Gary Forster, a camp consultant. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're talking about summer camp today. We're talking about camp culture, camps in Iowa, why some camps have struggled and disappeared, what makes camps work today. And with me, Alex Kretzinger. He's the summer camp program director at the Des Moines YMCA camp. Michael Johnson is director for Camp Hanashaw and Boone and communications liaison and the Iowa legislative representative for the American Camp Association Great Rivers Region. Gary Forster is here. He's a camp consultant. He also spent 30 years as a camp director, and he now travels around the country working with camps. And just before the break, we were talking about who camps are serving and who they need to reach out as their customers. And Gary was telling us that camps need to market to moms. Camps are also marketing to kids and communicating with kids. Here is Ella Dorman. She's reading a postcard she got from her camp counselor from last summer at Camp Wapsie.
Dear Ella, what's up, girlfriend?
It's Anna, your counselor from Cabin 7. I just got home from having coffee with Maddie. Hope your school year is going well. Hopefully I get to see you again at camp this summer. Love, Anna.
All right, so there's an effort to reach out and get kids to return to one camp. And Gary, return campers are a big part of having a successful camp, right?
Well, it's the biggest part of almost any business. If you can imagine, if Coca-Cola tasted like vinegar, they wouldn't have been in business very long. And so a camp has to have almost three-quarters of its kids want to come back the following year to be able to have that internal growth that happens when kids can teach each other and share their experiences with the new ones coming along.
And how do camps do that successfully? What are some of the things that make the kids want to come back?
We said the number one is that mom has to be satisfied. And with that communication thing, we got that wrong. We just assumed that kids were going to go home and tell mom. And I can tell you, I became a much better camp director after I became a parent. I'd take my own kid home from camp, and he'd sit in the back seat and fall asleep. He wouldn't tell me about camp.
Right, well, and you ask them, what did you do today? And they say nothing.
The right questions.
Right.
Yeah. Especially boys are the hardest to get to talk. But the other thing we found out is that we assume that kids want to have fun, and that's the number one reason they want to go to camp. But again, when we did a study on that, and we found out that if kids just had fun at camp, the answer as to what do they want to do next summer was, well, something else fun. I've already done your fun. Who else has got something fun to do? Camps often kind of see themselves as a theme park. They want to add a new ride or something new each year. But the camps that have the highest return rate, it turns out, the kids say the main reason they want to go back is because they made friends. Just like that wonderful camp letter you hear about where the counselor has become a friend for this camper. Those kinds of things happen in a cabin group because of kids of a similar age, a whole different structure and their own responsibility, and being watched over by this leader, this counselor. The best description I ever heard for a camp counselor is not a parent. And I love the double meaning of that one. Someone who's, you know, college age and trustworthy, but still something that the kids can imagine they could be someday. So to develop a friendship with a young adult and to develop new friendships in a whole different context in the outdoors where they're learning new skills together, those are, no wonder they're friendships that last a lifetime.
What are some of the things that camps do that might get in the way of those friendships forming?
Often, the guys mentioned earlier that safety is a big concern. And unfortunately, some folks that are inexperienced think what that means is we got to keep the kids busy all the time. And it turns out that some of the best things that happen between activities. So that if we play a hard game, capture the flag or soccer or whatever, and as soon as we're done, we say, okay, let's get off to our next activity. They're missing out on some of the best part, which is talking about the game and who had a good time, who got that pass. They may climb a climbing tower, but if they don't get a chance to talk about were they afraid and when did they overcome that fear and how far did they get, they're just isn't sharing, and then friendships aren't made. It turns out that so many times kids are just facing the back of another kid's head, just like they do in a classroom. They're moving from one place to another. They're waiting in line for an activity to start. And some camps think that's keeping the kids active and safe, but in fact, it's robbing them of the most important part, and that's sharing this new, different experience with kids their own age.
Alex, I would love for you to weigh in on this. I know that camp was a really important part of your life as a camper. Obviously, it's an important part of your life now, but think back on some of those relationships that were formed for you. Was that the most significant part of camp?
I think it was. The people that I went to camp with, I ended up reconnecting with some in college and some of them in later parts of life, and I still see some of them around. And there's always going to be that connection because you get to see a side of somebody that you don't see at school. Kids can succeed in different ways, and I think some kids do really well and kind of blossom in the classroom, and some really blossom in summer camp. And that's really the cool thing, is to see some of the kids that I was friends with at camp, who I probably wouldn't have been exposed to in school. But at camp, I definitely developed those relationships. And that's what kept me coming back and really got me involved in camp as it is, was a lot of that friendship building, and the friendships that are, I think, a little deeper, that are built on more of these risks and the successes and failures, and how they affect you and how other people can see that and be involved with you as well.
And I've also heard that you recently got engaged to someone that you met at camp when you were a teenager.
Yes, yes.
Congratulations.
thank you. Yeah, I proposed a couple weeks ago to the woman that I met at camp and kept working at camp with for several years. And it just kind of seemed natural to propose at camp. So yes, thank you.
Well, congratulations. And Michael, can you reflect on some of the friendships that maybe you formed, but also the friendships you see kids at camp forming?
Sure. I think it is actually, I think it's really important for the counselors that if they're using what we call best practices, I think that actually helps the campers form these friendships and to have fun at camp. Because if you have counselors that simply, their goal is to make sure that kids are having fun at camp, that's goal 1, 2, and 3. And what happens is you get kind of the Lord of the Flies situations, and no one's happy. Like, kids feel like all they want to do is have fun. But frankly, it's our job as adults to make sure that they're having fun, but to make sure that their fun is, I don't know. One of the things I'd like to use with my counselors, I'd like to say plan spontaneity. Because if you have a situation where you have kids that are just kind of going along and doing whatever they want, we've seen that does not at all help the situation. So I guarantee you that letter that we heard from that counselor, from that camper about her counselor, I guarantee you that counselor was a fantastic mix of someone who protected that kid and kept her safe, but at the same time knew what they needed to do to make sure that camper and all the other campers in that cabin were having a great time. And that's what the best counselors, that's what the best camps do. It's a balance of maintaining your best practices and ensuring that kids have a good time. And, the best memories I have from counselors when I was a kid, I have this counselor now, he's actually the athletic director at the high school that I went to, but he was my camp counselor, and he was so stern with us, but he also made sure that we were having fun, and he would always say things like, it rings in my head all the time, we would stay up way past our bedtime, and he would say, for your own safety, go to bed, and stuff like that just kind of rang with me. He understood that for us to have fun and be fresh the next day, we need to go to bed at a decent time, but he did it. He had kind of enforced the rules in a fun way, but still made sure we were doing what we needed to do.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. This hour, we're talking about summer camps, and you're welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Michael Johnson, director for Camp Hanashaw in Boone, Alex Kretzinger, he is the summer camp program director at the Des Moines Y Camp, and Gary Forster, camp consultant. He also spent 30 years as a camp director, and now he works with camps all over the country. And it's funny, Michael, you mentioned remembering things that people said to you at camp. Something else that we tend to remember from camp are the songs that we sang, the chants that we learned. And here we'll hear again from Ella and her big sister, Tess, with one of the songs that they sang last summer at camp.
Rock the boat, rock, rock the boat, rock the boat, rock, rock the boat.
People would always be like, when we did that, people would yell sink when we said rock.
All right, just a little bit of Rock the Boat. And 30 years from now, they'll probably still be able to sing that. And, Alex, we were talking earlier about how so many of the elements of camp have stayed the same. Singing these songs, chanting these chants, sitting around the campfire. What makes, in your opinion, what makes these experiences so powerful and so memorable?
Well, I think one thing that they really do, that that make them successful is, well, if we have our staff really buy into it, the kids see that and want to join in and be a part of whatever the staff are doing. As their role models, they think anything goofy that they watch a grown-up do is got to be the most fun thing. But we have a long connection as well with a lot of our traditions. Since we started in 1919, we still do some of the exact same programs in the exact same format that we did when we started. At the same time, we mix that with new programs and new songs and new skits that we learn. And I was at a camping conference last month, and I was at an interest session, and one of the leader of the session said that to make a camp tradition, you need 1 year for everybody to take it as new, 1 year for everybody to say, well, that's what we did last year. And by the third year, everyone says it's always been that way. And so as long as you have the kids seeing the staff get involved and love the songs and sing them loud, then the kids will join right in. And I found that that's been what's made those traditions so powerful and successful.
Michael, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah. The reason why it sticks is it's pure, unadulterated fun. And even as kids these days, well, kids any day, like, how often do you have a chance to just have pure, unadulterated fun with peers, with your peer group, and with counselors? Like, your parents aren't around, and like, you just let loose and you're singing songs, and it's just so joyous and wholesome. And I guarantee you, everybody that heard Ella doing that Rock the Boat put a smile on their face. I don't know, like, how could you not? I mean, it's just 100% absolute fun, and it's letting go, and it's great for those campers, and it's also great for the counselors as well.
Let's go to the phones. And again, you can join our conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Something that a lot of kids get to do at camp that they don't get to do anywhere else is ride horses. And that's where Wally comes in from Bradford. Hi, Wally.
Good morning.
Hi. You worked with the horses at summer camps. What was your job?
I was a farrier for many years, and in the late 60s to early 70s, I shot a lot of horses in Des Moines, Kansas City, Omaha areas, and I discovered that their older horses, the ones they called lesson horses, the really, really quiet, well-broke, very safe animals, would go on the road in the summertime, and what they did was went from camp to camp. And so I kept records on my clients' animals. Each individual animal I had a little record on. The interesting thing, and at first I found it confusing, when I found the same bunch of horses that I'd been working on, trimming their feet and shoeing them. When I got to them at camp, Dr. Pepper was no longer named Dr. Pepper. He was Apache, and Leo was no longer Leo. He was Kiowa, and there was Pawnee and Ute and Arapaho, and it all reflected some of the Native American themes that were fairly common in camps. I don't know if that's a thing of the past now, political correctness being what it is. In fact, many military leaders describe Native American horsemen as the world's finest light cavalry ever. So I imagine that's very appropriate.
Oh, but, interesting.
I thought it was interesting that the horses all got renamed for the summer when they went on the road and appeared at camps.
Well, Wally, thank you so much for sharing that with us. And Gary, let me ask you, I mean, you've seen a lot of camps, a lot of different themes. How important is the camp theme, the culture that they decide to use, to name the cabins and to make some of these traditions?
Making a cut from their regular life back at home is really critical for this to work, because these kids really want to belong. And all of us had difficulties with friendships and whether we were part of the right clique or not in school. And at camp, kids have found that they have been invited to join the coolest tribe ever. They got their own counselor, they got their own cabin, they got a bunch of friends that are eager to do things with them. So we need things that reinforce that we have a very special club. So if kids just sang pop songs, for instance, at camp, that's no different than what they do at home. If they do the same activities that they do at home, that's not special. It's why we continue to sing what folks call camp songs, is because it marks you as someone that's part of this separate tribe. We all joke that in the summer, you go to a Pizza Hut near any of our camps, and you'll see counselors there on their night off. And every one of them, before they eat, they'll all sing the Johnny Appleseed Grace, which everybody knows, and then they'll be singing camp songs to let everybody else know we're a part of this special tribe. And so, especially early on in camping history, the Native American culture, which has been so important for many of us in the way we see our country, it was just a natural to say, we're different, we're special, and look at us. And when they take that home, then, that's something that they don't forget.
I think one of the important things about camp, you know, we've talked about safety, we've talked about cultural touchstones, but also this is a time when kids are really away from their parents, really away from home. So is that, and we're going to go to a break here quickly, but Gary, I'll let you weigh in very quickly on that. Is that sense of independence really the key?
Yeah, and more so than ever before. Years ago in camping, we used to say, oh, we don't want a parent to ever call their child while they're at camp, because if they could hear their mother's voice, they might get homesick. Kids talk to their moms on the phone 20 times a day now. A kid can't wait to get to a point where their mom can't find them on the phone.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll talk more about that kind of independent experience that kids have at camp in just a moment. With me today, Gary Forster, a camp consultant. He spent 30 years as a camp director, and he now travels around the country working with camps. Michael Johnson is here. He's director for Camp Hanashaw in Boone and communications liaison and the Iowa legislative representative for the American Camp Association. And Alex Kretzinger is here. He is the summer camp program director at the Des Moines YMCA camp. You are also welcome to join our conversation with your questions, your comments, your stories about why camp was important to you. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about summer camp, sleepaway camp specifically. With me, Alex Kretzinger. He is the summer camp program director at the Des Moines YMCA camp. Michael Johnson is here. He's the director for Camp Hanashaw in Boone and communications liaison and the Iowa legislative representative for the American Camp Association. Gary Forster is here, camp consultant. He spent 30 years as a camp director. He now helps out camps all around the nation. And just before the break, we were talking about that experience of independence that kids have when they go to camp, because of course they always have their families to lean on. Most kids, if they're fortunate, always have their families to lean on. And then at camp, they have that experience of being in a safe environment, but on their own. Michael, what do you think is important about that independent experience?
Well, first of all, I agree 1,000% with what Gary said. A lot of times, almost across the board, we get kids that come to camp and, you know, it's a chance for them to spread their wings, to show their independence from their parents at home, sometimes even from their siblings at home. And I think that one of the reasons that you send a kid to camp, I send my kid to camp even though we live at camp, so I'm sending her literally across the camp road. But one of the reasons that you send your kid to camp is for a kid to grow. And no better way to grow for a kid to go and foster their independence and spread their wings. And that to me is one of the greatest benefits that you can do at camp. And a lot of times cutting that cord is harder for the parent than it is for the kid.
Alex, you want to weigh in?
Sure. I think that one of the things that kids are needing, and every kid needs in their development, is a chance to define themselves. And defining themselves away from influences that they've grown up around. So some of that means that when they get to summer camp, they get to decide or learn that they're good at something that they never knew they had a skill in. And that independence feeds right into a sense of confidence that those kids can then take home with them. A confidence in not only their ability to overcome those challenges, but also their a confidence in who they've discovered that they really are. And that independence, I think, is really one of the things that makes summer camp important, because the independence of relationships, of building your own friendship on your own without mom and dad setting up a play date or anything, I think is also what really builds into that. So yeah, I think independence is very important.
This is an email from Vicky. She says, I'm a United Methodist pastor and with two kids, age 14 and 11. The 14-year-old's going back to camp this summer for her 10th time. She started out with a parent-child overnight camp and has grown from there. My kids go up to Okoboji United Methodist Camp, which is American Camping Association accredited. What I love about camp for my kids is the opportunity to try on different aspects of who they are, to try to be different people from small-town preacher's kids in the fishbowl. They've made great friends. They developed the love of the outdoors. They've become more independent and confident, and every year they want to go back. And Laura is on the line next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Laura.
Hello.
Oh, I think she accidentally hung up the phone. Laura, give us a call back and we'll put you on the air just as soon as you get back to us. But the I want to talk a little bit about the different kinds of camps around the nation. And Gary, I know you're not an expert on camps in Iowa, but how, from your perspective, does camp culture in Iowa differ from some of the other places in the country?
Boy, it's really surprisingly similar. If you go to almost any camp, you'd be hard-pressed to decide which state you're actually in. We said that parents are concerned about safety. One of those issues is we program our kids all summer long now as parents. In the old days, a week at camp was something really special, that one time you got to go away from home in the summer. Now, lots of parents book every single week of their entire kid's summer. And some of those will be going to a sports camp or a cheer camp or a science camp or a whole variety of different things, day camps and resident camps. What we've mostly been talking about today is this idea of the traditional summer resident camp, which is kind of a throwback to, you know, making choices and being part of a small group and having a camp counselor. So there's all these new options that are around that are exactly camping. They have their own benefits, of course, because you can learn new skills and be around some new instructors. But that core piece of this, counselors who aren't a parent and these traditional skills and spending lots of time outdoors and being a member of this small cabin group, that's really the same in just about every state.
Now, Michael, as someone who is a legislative liaison and obviously knows a great deal about all the camps in Iowa, in preparing for the show, you told us that there are no private camps in Iowa. Can you tell us what that means?
Well, there's no private camps in the sense. So I 100% agree with what Gary said. I guess I'll back up to kind of answer that question. I went to camp as a kid in Colorado. I grew up in western Kansas, so I went to camp in Colorado, to a private camp in Colorado. And then all of my professional experience before this, I spent 13 summers in the Northeast in New England at three different private camps. Those camps run seven weeks of summer, all resident camp, tuition right around $10,000 a kid per summer. And so the structure here in Iowa is very different. The camps are what we call agency camps. They're affiliated with another organization. The Y Camp is obviously affiliated with the YMCA. We're affiliated with Campfire. There are a lot of camps that are affiliated, like Laura, who is calling in, or the email that we got. Her kids go to a camp that's affiliated with the church. There are no camps that are privately owned, and no ACA camps anyway that are privately owned in the state of Iowa. Now, exactly what Gary said, when I came here to interview for the job, I was actually quite surprised at what I saw, because even the structure and how the camps run and what you do are very similar. One thing that struck me is a lot of the camps in Iowa in the Des Moines River Valley, they actually look pretty similar to some of the camps that I was at up in the Northeast. And that struck me different, because I honestly thought that I was going to a camp in the middle of a cornfield. But I know the camps in the River Valley, there's camps in Northeast Iowa, camps up at Lake Okoboji and such. They are absolutely beautiful camps with lots of topography and far. And honestly, that's that's another thing that's a selling point for a lot of our camps in Iowa, is they look different than what these kids are used to seeing. So, there are more similarities than there are differences in how camps look and how they're run in Iowa as they are everywhere else in the country.
Now, I spent a lot of time at camps as a kid. I even lived at a camp when I was very small. And when you talk about how beautiful they are and how the topography is different, that really strikes a chord with me. And every time I hear about a camp closing and being sold, that's the part that really breaks my heart. Because if this land is sold and if it's developed, we can't get that back. We have so little parkland in Iowa as it is. What happens to camps when they get sold, Michael?
Well, it frankly kind of depends on the situation of that camp that's sold, that's doing the selling, and what their needs are. When a camp gets to a spot, camp itself is such an emotional piece. It's an emotional piece for people that attend, and obviously it's emotional for people that run those camps and pour their hearts and their souls into it. Camping is not a job. It's a lifestyle. So when you get to the point when you have to sell, it's obviously a gut-wrenching and kind of you run out of options. So what happens is it kind of depends on who's selling the camp and what they can do. Everyone that sells a camp ideally would like to sell to someone who is going to continue to run that as a camp, because a lot of camps have tradition. They want those things to continue. And again, they put a lot of time, effort, and energy into continuing those traditions. And camp people want camp to do camp things. But as you said, unfortunately, sometimes it happens where a camp will have to sell to a developer, and then they'll do with that land what they want. But I think ideal situations, and I think this happens most of the time, camps try to sell to someone that will keep it open as a camp.
We have this tweet from Charles. I loved camping at Camp Hanashaw because of the multicultural counselors. I miss my Aussie counselor. Michael, is that something that you try to do at Camp Hanashaw, where you introduce people from other cultures?
We do. We hire counselors internationally. And again, for a lot of camps, especially American Association Camp, that's kind of a best practice to introduce the kids to different cultures. And frankly, for the counselors that are working as well, you know, that's one part of this job that gets overlooked are the 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds that we hire to do these jobs. We hire them to do a job, and that's absolutely what it is. It's a job. But they're growing themselves as well. And so we hire internationals for the benefit of our camp and for the kids that come. And yeah, we absolutely do. I was in London a month ago hiring staff, and that's an ongoing process and something that we love to do.
Let's go back to the phones. Laura is back from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Laura.
Hello.
Hi.
And what a great segue, because it was the point I was just going to make, that camp is amazingly important for the campers, but also for the young staff. Both of my kids went to Boy Scout camp. They went as campers for 2, maybe 3 years, and then as soon as they were able, they got on as counselors in training, and then they got on as junior counseling staff, and eventually both of them were running areas at the camp and went back as staff for 6 or 8 years apiece. And to this day, both of them now in their 20s, when they come home, and they're on either coast, but if they've got more than 3 days here back in Iowa, they make a point to go out to camp and go split wood or stack refuse or do whatever needs to be done and go cook over an open fire and share stories. I can't tell you the number of weddings and families that have been built out of that cohort of campers. And you see the lifelong impacts. I attend an event every summer at which one of the highlights every year is this sort of campfire night. And we all look forward to one of our senior members, and by senior I mean in his 90s, and he will sing. This fellow's been a pastor in Lutheran churches for, you know, many decades, and he knows all the camp songs and all the verses and gets us all to sing, and it is one of the highlights of the week that we all spend together. It's a life-forming experience. These friendships go on forever, and it really is important in the development of these, you know, older teenagers, younger 20s, as they start out in life.
Laura, thank you so much for sharing that with us today. And We're getting close to the end of the hour, so we need to talk about a big issue that is facing a lot of Iowa camps this summer and facing a lot of Iowa parents this summer as well. And Michael, that is that it hasn't been decided yet when school is going to start in August. How is that affecting you at Camp Hanashaw and camps all over?
Yeah, so this is a big issue for us with the school calendar. American Camp Association does not have an official stance, but the problem that we're having right now is, frankly, a lot of camps have had to push forward and go ahead and get their marketing material out because, believe it or not, the winter time is when a lot of us start our marketing, unless some do it in the fall. But this time of year, you have to have your marketing materials ready. So we've had to push forward. But for us personally, we like to provide our day camps right up until kids start school. We like to have something for the kids to do until they start school. And the issue that we have now is no one knows when they're starting school in the fall yet. So we had to go ahead and put our marketing materials out, and we set our calendar. But we don't know when we're going to end camp quite yet. And one of the issues that we have and why the internationals are really important for us is we could get into a situation where the kids in Iowa, the school-age kids in Iowa, are starting school 2 weeks after Iowa State students do. And then at Iowa State, Iowa, and UNI, Drake. So if those if our counselors are all going back to college, then we don't have as many counselors to rely upon. And so even with our internationals, they have meetings that they have to attend in their different countries with the State Department to let them know when they're going to be going back to the countries that they're from. And so all of that's in the air right now. So like you said, we don't have an official stance. We would just like the situation to get resolved sooner rather than later.
So have you been talking to legislators about that?
I have been talking to legislators about that, but there hasn't really, I mean, honestly, right now, I don't know. We get a different story every time we talk to someone. I was under the impression a few weeks ago that it was going to be under local control, and this story is changing consistently. I know that they had planned already on having this situation resolved because I believe it is, I believe the date is March 4th or somewhere around there where the Department of Education has to have the start date for the 2015-2016 school year from the individual school districts. And obviously they're not able to do that yet because they still don't know what the resolution of this issue is going to be.
Right. Alex, how is that affecting you?
Well, the YMCA does not have an official opinion on any of this as well, but we're definitely waiting to see. Our schedules, like Michael said, are very based on schools because school is that essential part of every kid's life. But when it starts and when it ends kind of also affects our schedule and what our calendar looks like, not only for staff, but also for when we start ordering food and when we start ordering products that we'll need for the summer camp. We need to make sure we have everything on the right budget month and everything like that. And so it definitely makes things more difficult not knowing when school will start.
All right. So here in the dead of winter, we're getting a little bit of a break today, but it's been so cold and so bleak. What is the one thing you're most excited about with camp this summer? Alex, quickly.
I am most excited to expose some more kids to the outdoors. That's by far my favorite thing, is showing kids frogs for the first time or letting them see turtles somewhere other than Animal Planet is pretty awesome to watch the awe on their face. So that's one of the things I'm very excited about.
Michael, how about you?
Pretty similar. Excited to expose new kids to camp and have our kids that have been coming to camp to come back and see what new things we have in store for them and to see their faces when they see their counselors the first time. It's such a treat.
Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Michael Johnson of Camp Hanashaw. He's the camp director for Camp Hanashaw in Boone. He's also communications liaison and the Iowa legislative representative for the American Camp Association. Alex Kretzinger, thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Alex Kretzinger is the summer camp program director at the Des Moines YMCA camp. And Gary Forster, thank you so much.
we didn't get a chance to sing a camp song. They'll have to send their kids to camp.
Right. Gary Forster is a camp consultant. He spent 30 years as a camp director, and he now travels around the country helping camps all across the nation. Talk of Iowa is produced by Lindsay Moon, Dennis Reese, Claire Roth, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @IPRTalk. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.